Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I would rather eat lobster at a truck stop. It's time for Must Have Seen TV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century from I Love Lucy to News Radio. And I'm your TV guide, Brett White, and I am sometimes a drag queen named Barb Hardley. Say hello to the crystal, to my Tiffany, Ethan Kay. Hello, Ethan.
Hello, Brett. I'm really looking forward to unpacking the crystal and Tiffany dynamic from today's episode. It's from a show that pretty much no one remembers, and We've been doing kind of a string of those, but it's for a good cause.
Yeah, there's no Michael That's Douglas in this, though.
No Michael Douglas.
Have you seen Showgirls? I just watched that for the first time on July 4th.
Yeah, I saw it many years ago, probably a couple of years after it first came out. I will watch pretty much anything that Kyle MacLachlan's in, because I just think he's so much fun to watch.
Amazing in that movie. And yeah, I'd never seen it before. And wow, what a ride.
Wow. I saw him on the subway once, but
how does the work look in person?
Oh, he is a handsome man.
He's getting good.
But he's also, you know, if you check out his Instagram, it's just him having fun. He's like doing press stuff, but he also has a winery. So I think it's Pursuit by Bear Wines. I think it's what it is, but he's got wine. So he's always kind of showing off wines. And then when Twin Peaks came back, he was doing a lot of Twin Peaks promo for that. And so you'll still see him post things about like damn fine cup of coffee. He's just having fun with his life.
How often does he reminisce about his time as Mr. Hyde on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Wait, he was? I only saw the first season of that.
Yeah. Yeah, he was, pretty sure he was Mr. Hyde. He was Quake's dad, and Quake's dad in the comics is Mr. Hyde, and so I think he was Mr. Hyde.
Oh, cool.
So,
fun. Great in everything. I cannot think of a bad movie that he was in.
Flintstones? A+.
Nope. A+. The Doors. He was great as Raymond Zarek in The Doors. Dune. Give him Dune.
Oh, right, yeah.
Touch of Pink. Give him that playing Cary Grant in a bathtub. We'll give him that.
So what are you watching besides Kyle MacLachlan's filmography?
What have you been watching lately? It's a new anime season, so we're just kind of trying to get some new things with that. As far as live action, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is running, I believe it's 16th or 17th season, which is remarkable for a live action comedy. And it's still just as funny as it's always been. So that's been said. That's the live action thing we've been watching.
Yeah. If you haven't seen The Mick, Caitlin Olsen's sitcom, it is now on Netflix. The old episodes, they canceled it for no reason, even though it was probably one of the funniest shows that was on for those two seasons. So.
That's just the way that streaming goes. Right now, it is the 19th of July, 2023. So we're in the middle of the WGA strike. We're in the middle of the beginnings of the SAG strike.
SAG strike. Oh, boy. Fran Drescher burning it down. The best audition for her own Veep that I've ever seen was that barn burner speech where she just laid into everything and like called it like, we are at the gates of Versailles. It was like, this is great. Give Fran a raise.
We have Ron Perlman actually threatening to burn things down, which I loved.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Another guy. Only good work from Ron Perlman.
So yeah, like absolutely pro strike, pro union, pro labor, anti Bob Iger, anti all these damn.
I don't know what to say. Like I've been in Bob Iger's corner since Michael Eisner handed the reins to him. And it just seems like Disney is not having a good year.
No, it's like, just treat people with respect, like baseline. That's all you got to do. It shouldn't be that hard. No one needs to be that rich. I'm sorry. Maybe you assholes don't deserve a bonus of a couple $100 million a year. What did you do this year? Yeah. You take some calls?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. I mean, I would rather give a $100 million raise to a guy that sits in a basement and just turns like a giant crank. Because that's hard work.
And
physical labor is hard work. White collar work is hard work. I'm sorry. Blue collar work is hard work. Just work hard. And
if you're a fan of
the world will not reward you.
If you're a fan of classic sitcoms, you know, the 1960 strike was WGA and SAG strike simultaneously, and that's what got them residuals. So that's why a lot of your classic TV people could sustain life through the 60s, 70s, and 80s and 90s, the heyday of reruns. Hayden Rourke himself was on the picket line in the 80s. The 80s SAG strike when Ed Asner was the president of SAG, because I talked to Ed Asner about that strike.
Ooh. Well, I just finished a book called The Disney Revolt by Friedman. I forget his first name. I have it on my shelf. I just finished it on Saturday. I had 5 hours to kill in the getting my car repaired. And it was about the 1941 labor strike at the Disney studios. And what really happened there was all the studios were getting organized and the animators were kind of the last ones to do that. But unfortunately they were being organized by one of Al Capone's thugs. So Disney, the people at Disney were like, we should form our own union just so that this Al Capone guy doesn't move in on our animators. So they form this little like in-house union. They don't do all that much. And then the other studios start unionizing. And Disney's like, well, we have our own little union. And then the really pro-union people are like, that's a union founded by management. We can't have that. We need our own union. So they started their own union, supported, and then ended up in bed with the Al Capone guy against the Disney organization. And the book itself is fantastic. If you ever want to hear about just like early Disney studio and labor relations in the 1940s, it ends with the Al Capone guy dying in a truck explosion. So
jeez.
they have a whole long list of like all the people who got bumped off by the mob after a while.
Sounds like the next Christopher Nolan movie, maybe.
Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah. So,
well,
you know, it's going to be interesting. Right? It's an, watching a bunch of shit for work that I don't like. So I'm not going to talk about that. I'm watching a lot of the Drag Race International spinoffs, which is not a surprise, but I mean, you know, nowadays there's at least three different Drag Race series running concurrently at all times, which is too much. But I've been trying to get caught up, and what I've been surprised by is the quality of all of them this year has been as good as, maybe even better than the American parent ones. Drag Race Belgium, Drag Race Belgium was fine. Drag Race Sweden was like better than that. And then Drag Race España is like the A-list. It's become kind of like the best international spinoff, and its season 3 is crushing it. which I'm about halfway through. And then currently airing right now are Drag Race France and Drag Race Mexico. And they are outstanding. Drag Race Mexico is the best looking Drag Race series. The cinematography and production design is next level. Like, it's really gorgeous. The workroom looks like a kind of like a Super Mario Land 90s Taco Bell kind of like mashup, which it's really great. So WoW Presents Plus is where you watch
that is
all of them.
That is five Drag Race shows at, you know, in one breath.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
And
that's
Drag
more
Race
than Law and Order.
Drag Race Down Under starts in a week, and Drag Race Philippines starts early August.
Eight, the American version. My God.
Well, nine all-stars.
Nine all-stars.
And then Canada and UK will be at some point this year. So it's been a lot, but it's worth it. So if you've fallen off of any of those Drag Race fans, I would say hop on for France and Mexico, definitely.
Well, at least you're enjoying them.
So we did get a comment on the Alfred Hitchcock Presents episode from a listener, Ethan Sloan.
Hello, Ethan.
Who said that one of his favorite podcasts. Thank you, sincere. I've been listening on Stitcher, who just announced they're shutting down. Whoa. Now I'm trying to move all my podcasts over to Spotify, but I can't find your show on it. Where else are you guys hosted? We should be on Spotify now because of this very comment. I apparently just had to push a button that literally says activate. And I did that.
I'm searching for it, and Spotify is not loading on my phone. So give us some time. We'll probably be there by the time this airs.
Yeah, so I thought we'd been on there. I don't know. If it is not apparent, my approach to handling the podcast is gingerly and rarely. So I've
well, it looks I'm checking it right now, and we are officially on Spotify.
Oh, wow. That was really quick. I hit that button like 80 minutes ago.
I got my phone to work. It's even got the New Year's Eve live trailer up there. We are up there.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Check
so,
us out on
yeah.
Spotify.
So hit that up.
I figure if the two big ones for me are Apple Podcasts and Spotify. If you're not on there, like you're on Bandcamp, I have to make that like extra step. But honestly, we're on Spotify, so check us out.
Yeah, I mean, I have always just done iTunes. You know, I'm a basic bitch. Are we ready to try to time travel?
Let's time travel.
This week we'll be traveling to February 28th, 1984. Footloose ruled the box office, Jump by Van Halen topped the charts, and ABC aired the Oh Madeline episode, Play Crystal For Me. Ethan, you must have seen Play Crystal For Me before today, or you must have heard of the sitcom Oh Madeline before today.
I remember hearing about the sitcom Oh Madeline, because I remember when Madeline Kahn passed away, there was like, and she did this television show in addition to all the other things that she worked on. It's important to know that she was nominated for a Golden Globe for Oh Madeline,
which I'm looking up things right now that I probably should have been looking up before. Oh my God. So Madeline Kahn, icon, genius, most probably known, well, to me, for Clue. Flames on the side of my face. And also she played the First Lady, Bob Newhart's wife, in the First Family movie, First Family, written by Buck Henry. Gilda Radner played their daughter. The ages there seem very weird. I don't know if Madeline Kahn could be Gilda Radner's daughter. The movie is not as good as it sounds, because you hear
It's Fred Willard and Buck Henry. And is Frank Langella in that one?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
But it's like, I mean, Bob Newhart, Madeline Kahn, and Gilda Radner. It's like, well, this is going to be great. And man, it is a racist, but we're fine. I love Buck Henry. But so this should have been, and I do actually think that it was good. I think, you know, because this was produced by Tom Werner and Marcy Carsey.
This is the first production of theirs because they went on to produce Brett.
I mean, oh my God, I'm looking at the list right now. The Cosby Show, Roseanne, Grace Under Fire, Sybil, Third Rock from the Sun, That 70s Show. I mean, That 80s Show, That 90s Show. But I mean, like, yeah, it's nuts. Like, they are one of the major, you know, forces of like 90s sitcoms, and this is where they got their start. And I honestly think you can see that quality. I mean, this is the penultimate episode, so maybe, I don't know, maybe earlier ones are even better, or maybe this one is the best because they really honed it. I don't know.
And it would make sense that she would get her own show. She's a comedian from way back. She's been nominated for multiple awards. She won a Tony for the Sisters Rosenzweig. Everyone that I in my family recognizes her from Blazing Saddles, from Young Frankenstein, from History of the World Part One, her work with Mel Brooks. When I was growing up, I remember her appearances on reruns of Saturday Night Live. She was just a very talented big name in the 70s and 80s. So it would make sense that she gets this, her own TV show that kind of, I don't want to say it was consciously done like this, but I get the feeling that this was meant to set her up kind of like a Lucille Ball.
Yeah.
I Love Lucy character.
Because the premise of, so what is the premise of this show? Because I feel like just coming into this episode cold, I was like, what is this show about? I mean,
from what I read about it, it was Madeline Kahn plays Madeline. That's the character's name. She's married to a romance novel writer who's fairly successful, who goes under the who's a man, but writing as a woman, Crystal Love. Charlie is her husband. And I think from what I gathered, because I didn't watch all 18 episodes. I don't have that kind of attention span. But there's a lot of my husband's successful, so what am I gonna do? Which is very I Love Lucy.
Yeah.
And this is, I think, one of the episodes where their careers cross. She's kind of a housewife looking for neat things to do.
Well, and they don't have children.
They don't have children.
Which is also like, I mean, let's be honest, that is a huge choice for sitcoms, especially like starring heterosexual couples in their 40s. Like, you don't have children? What? Like, how is that not the entire point of the show? So, yeah, good for them.
And Madeline Kahn, I love that in a lot of her movies, she does use accents. In this episode, she uses her regular New York accent, but also slips into her more playful accents that she uses in other things. And so she was born in New York, lived in New York. She was she started as a singing waitress at a Bavarian restaurant in New York. Like, she's fully a New Yorker. And her husband in this, played by James Sloyan, has a very New York accent. He's very New York in this. So it's really just this like Americana, New York.
Yeah. You
know, not real America, according to.
That's why that's why I think that this might have only lasted a season, is because the 80s is a rough time if you want to do a sitcom that is not about a white family in the suburbs.
Yeah.
So the fact that they didn't have kids and that they didn't just make her like, you know, the mother of three children or like on the PTA is like, wow, you guys really was risky.
They could have done the Doris Day thing where she had kids and then all of a sudden
disappeared.
For a couple of seasons, she, no kids.
Moved to San Francisco. The kids kick them out the window. No. But yes, this week on Must Have Seen TV, we'll be talking about the Old Manilyn episode Play Crystal For Me. It is the 17th of 18 episodes, and it was written by Robert Stern and Prudence Frazier, Barton Dean and Neil Marlins, and directed by J.D. LeBeaux. Here's how newspapers in 1984 describe the episode. Madeline disguises herself as a flamboyant author to help sell the romance novel Charlie wrote under a female pen name. Ethan, how accurate is that description?
Very. It's leaving out all of the conflict, and also doesn't allude to the fact that Charlie has been writing romance novels for his entire career and makes it sound like it's a one-off, but here you go.
Well, it also does not mention the guest star, Charles Ludlam, who at this point had been doing like off-Broadway plays, winning Obie Awards in New York City, who is a homosexual playwright and female impersonator, and got this gig because he went to school with Madeline Kahn.
I didn't know that part.
Yeah, I found a little bit. So I did a search on newspapers.com and only 11 newspapers mentioned his name.
Wow.
And that's like 11 newspapers across all of America. Only 11. I searched Charles Ludlam in the month of February and only 11 results came back.
Well, Charles Ludlam, which is kind of surprising because Charles Ludlam himself was a name.
Yeah.
Was writing plays, performing in plays, directing plays, winning literally 6 Obie Awards for his plays. His play, The Mystery of Irma Vep, was the most performed play in 1991.
Yeah, in my Googling, I found, I think one of the reasons why is because you can find excerpts from a biography that was written about him called Ridiculous, The Theatrical Life and Times of Charles Ludlam by David Kaufman. You can find it on Google Books, like big chunks of it. And so I found it. And apparently the part about this episode, ABC, like, was unsure, like going into making this episode, ABC was on the fence about whether or not to reveal the fact that Tiffany Knight is a man in drag. Like, they were so like, ugh! And so they definitely like didn't want to promote that, it seems, which makes sense since if only 11 newspapers mentioned it, it's probably because ABC didn't tell people.
Yeah. Well, I think I want to also point out to everybody listening and watching that we are still, even though it is July 19th, we are still working through our Pride Month series. So this counts for the 80s. And when Charles Ludlam is the reason that we felt that this episode of Oh Madeline would be a good representative for the 80s.
Yeah. And So Charles Ludlam plays Tiffany Knight, who at first we do not know is a drag queen, because the episode starts with they're talking about Tiffany Knight being like the major competition for Crystal Love. Crystal Love's Charles's manager is like getting on to him for not being more of a presence to like hawk his novels.
Yeah, it's kind of a very slow, it's a very slow opening. There's no exciting action. It's just I need to sell my book.
Yeah, and that's it. But there is, I liked one joke up top, or I liked a couple jokes actually. Like Madeline describes Tiffany Knight as like it's like an explosion at the Rose Parade, all like the feathers and stuff that she wears. I thought it was funny.
I thought that her shirt looked like Beetlejuice because it was black and white striped.
Well, this is when, so Charles is her husband's name?
Yeah, I didn't
even look at, he's Charlie. Okay, so Charlie and then Charles Ludlam.
Yeah, he's Charlie is played by James Sloyan. He was a big voice actor for commercials, though he did a couple episodes of Star Trek across seasons. I mean, Charles Ludlam and Madeline Kahn are the stars, no joke.
Oh, by far, yeah. So he comes up with the idea, like, oh, you could play Crystal Love. And you could go do like signings and stuff. Like, a man can't do this because if all the women find out that a man wrote these things, they won't like, well, I like it anymore.
Yeah. So they're pulling the JT Leroy Heart is Deceitful Above All Things, where there's one writer that is writing their heart out and sending somebody else pretending to be them for actual press tours and various things like that.
Yeah. And when Madeline hears this plan, her response is, if she would like to play Crystal, her response is, I would rather eat lobster at a truck stop, which made me laugh out loud. And wait, and then she was like, I can't remember the context of this joke, but I thought this was good too, where she was talking about all the things she can do as an author, like, you know, do book signings, go on a tour, appear on the last 23 seconds of the Tonight Show. I laughed at that.
I can use words like genre and denouement.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, it's at that point that I knew I was in safe hands, when I had laughed twice in the cold open.
It's one of those shows, I think, like Monty, where it's like, oh, the jokes themselves are pretty good.
Yeah.
It's just part of a sinking ship.
Yeah, because there isn't much. I mean, there isn't much to this at all. Like, we're at the book signing immediately. Like, yeah, I feel like 3 minutes in, we're at the book signing at first, and she is there. It starts with, I thought this woman was going to be a character on the show. Because we go to the bookstore, and the very first thing we see is like a woman, a New York woman, talking to another woman who has a book in her hand. And she was like, oh, Moby Dick, oh, why would you want to get that? It's a lot like Jaws 2, except the fish doesn't eat the helicopter. You should get Embers of Passion by Crystal Love or whatever.
That character was a regular on the show. She played Madeline Kahn's best friend. That's why she
would've... God.
That's why she was there. I also think it's really funny too that a bookstore has a display up of Moby Dick.
Yeah,
like, here, it's a 100-year-old novel. Like, we're spotlighting it today. Nothing else is on the shelves.
They did not treat her like a regular at all.
It's one of those shows. I keep saying one of those shows. It's one of those sitcoms where you have your regular cast of characters and you have to use every one of them once per show. So this is her part. And then their friend Robert comes in later. He's got his part, and like they're throughout the series, they're recurring characters. But
there should have been a scene like in the bathroom or like over to the side of her, like coaching Madeline. Like, no, like you gotta, you know, hock your boobs up. You gotta be sexy. Like, just show us something.
Very New York.
Yeah. So then Madeline enters and. I mean, she's in some Bosom Buddies drag. This dress that she's wearing, which I guess was like the style back then. It's like a drop waist dress. Mm-hmm. Like, the hem is mid calf, but the waist of it is at the crotch. Like, the waist of it is like a good 8 inches below the natural waist. And it looks like you're wearing a floral pink lacy potato sack.
And she also has a blonde wig on over her normal red hair. So it's a much larger kind of like, I don't know what to explain it as. It's like, the only thing I want to say is King of the Hill.
It's like, it's some Dynasty hair. Cause I am also watching Dynasty. Right,
it's 1984.
Now. Yeah. So it's some big bang feathered. So she's sits down, she starts signing them. And then like, is it like the first, they might like, do a dissolve to her signing a book for this woman who was just like, your books are so trashy, so sweaty and steamy and hairy.
Then she goes, I have to call all the guys at the fire station. the line that really got me was that for some reason there was like a reporter all the way at the other end of the room yelling questions at her. Yeah. And there are only like 8 people at this book signing, which for a popular novelist who has never made a public appearance, this is unrealistic.
Yeah.
But there's so many yelling questions across and the person goes, Crystal, are you married? And her response is, oh, I couldn't be tied to one man. I'm like the wind, free to blow the hats off of all men, which is very sexual. I don't want to explain what blowing the hat of somebody is, but you can probably imagine.
Yeah. And she's kind of doing like a Gabor accent, I noted. Like, it's vaguely kind of like Hungarian heiress kind of. They ask her something about like going on a trip to a mountain or something. And she was like, she talks about how she would write her novel. She's like, oh, I would bang out a couple of chapters while Gustav climbed a mountain, stuff like that.
It's all this hyped up, this fake romance stuff. She uses words like toss off and bang out, which are also, so, and she's talking about how she was able to just like write something like really quickly. And her husband, who's also standing there, said, took me 10 months to write that book. And three of those, I had pink eye. And then the New York friend's like, oh, I read the whole thing while waiting in line for Yentl.
Yeah.
1984, New York.
And now this is when Tiffany Knight shows up to like settle the score, check out the competition, read a bitch, drag her.
As Tiffany Knight in a performance that I would say probably steals the show.
Yeah. Well, it comes in. The very first thing that she says is like, she says something to her. Okay, this was a complicated joke. Like, what she said, like her secretary's name is Rod, and so therefore he is her Rod and her staff. Right? Is that what she said? Yeah,
that's what she said.
Yeah.
Rod also does not have an IMDb credit in this. Neither does the interviewer. They're like literally six people on this page's IMDb.
Yeah, there's like a double triple entendre of it's like a synonym entendre of just like he's my staff, because he's a hunk of man. Like he's he's like tall, buff, but wearing a suit. When he opens the door, like one person in the audience reacts as if they recognize who that person is, and then is immediately like, oh wait, no. So I had to watch the scene a couple times to try and figure out that joke. And then the reporter, you know, ever the classy reporter, basically asked them who gets more dick, basically. He's like, which one of you fucks more?
He didn't say that in those words.
No, but that's the gist.
Nowadays, you could probably ask that in an interview, weirdly enough, but 1984, no.
You'd have to frame it as like a BuzzFeed game or something with like a paddle with like a yes and no, like which is what I do I'd rather do that for a living than a lot of what I do. But Crystal, aka Madeline, kind of is like, oh, well, you know, Tiffany's so much older and has been at it for so much longer, so I'm sure she's had so much more.
And Madeline Kahn is just perfect for this part. She shows a little bit of apprehension because it's she's pretending to be somebody else, but she's also ready to spar and really good at the improvs.
Her character's hard to get a hold of because I don't know, like when Lucy is not in the thick of it, she still comes across as wily. Like even if she's just like making breakfast, or she still feels, whereas like, I don't know, Madeline in the beginning of the episode when there was no scheme afoot, I didn't get any vibe. And so like when she was actually really good at improvising and like riffing, I was like, oh, that's good. I didn't expect that.
So it's kind of a terse situation between Tiffany and Crystal, and then kind of the interviewer gets into it a little bit. So there's a little bit of friction. Tiffany trashes Crystal's new book. Was it the Embers of Ecstasy.
Oh yeah.
And she trashes it by saying that, oh, it's just your old novels just rearranged into something new. And Charlie, the husband who wrote the book, says there's not a same word in my previous novel, Towers of Ecstasy, as there is in Embers of Ecstasy, except for ecstasy and throbbing, but I use it differently. That was good.
Well, and so when Tiffany and her henchmen leave, Like they kind of they would like storm off, and then they basically they are treated like God. Who is Muttley? Muttley's a sidekick of who?
Dick Dastardly.
Snidely Whiplash, or no? Yeah, but it's very like that's the vibe of the two of them is very Hanna-Barbera cartoon villains because he outside Tiffany's like, yeah, we got to go. My bazongas are falling. The thing a man has to do to make a living these days.
It's pretty obvious that Tiffany is a man.
I mean, so if y'all are Drag Race fans, I would say that Tiffany, Charles Ludlam in drag, is very Pandora Box meets Tammy Brown. So it's campy, it's kooky, it's it's not pretty.
This is straight up fur coat, like, glamour walking through the door of a bookshop that only has seven people waiting for a popular novel, whatever.
And because it's 1984, Tiffany's hair is like a dark, dark brown, and all of it is like mounded onto one side. It's like a side pony, but it's just like all of it is just over on one.
So the action
did you get commercials?
I didn't get commercials. Did you get the opening credits?
No.
Okay.
Because there are two versions that I saw on YouTube, and one had good picture, but the audio sounded like it was in a tin can.
That's
and
what
then
I saw.
The other one had looked like you were watching it through an Instagram like static filter, but the audio was clear. So I watched the static filter one, which had the commercials.
There we go. That means two people recorded it and put it up to YouTube. I watched the version that had the bad audio, but the pretty good visuals. And that included the opening credits, which I will suggest watching just for the opening credits, because the opening credits it's just a montage of scenes from the show set to the most ridiculous ragtime music I have ever heard. It is completely inappropriate. It is like you're at the fucking Country Bear Jamboree.
Oh, wow.
Watching Madeline Kahn do pratfalls off a couch.
That's what's fun.
It does not make any sense. It is that probably killed the show in itself, was this goddamn ragtime opening.
Well, so the commercials that I got, which I do believe like this was original airing. So the night that it originally aired, the commercials were, it was a Hanes commercial for ladies where it was a woman who was wearing like a gorgeous white ball gown and doing dancey stuff and a guy in a tuxedo, like watching her through a keyhole. And then it was two kids talking about Colgate with maximum fluoride protection.
Kids talk about that all the time.
Another one was a maxi pad commercial. Women were discovering dots. So, because it was the introduction of like a dots technology to maxi pads.
I thought you meant Dippin' Dots, the ice cream of the future.
Or 7-Up. And then the last one was a commercial for AKA Pablo, a new Norman Lear sitcom starring Paul Rodriguez about a Mexican-American family. Also, Hector Elizondo was in it. And it aired for a month. It aired six episodes.
That's very interesting that you say that, because I just realized that the version that has the opening credits is from USA.
Yeah.
So it must have been rebroadcast on USA.
Yep.
After being shown on ABC.
Which makes sense. That seems like O'Madeline seems like the kind of thing that fledgling cable networks would be like, oh, hell yeah. I mean, USA did that in the 90s, too. Like they would rerun Boston Common and Union Square and a whole bunch of like failed NBC sitcoms, which I love that. So now we're back at the house. The neighbor comes over with the newspaper, right? Yeah.
Yeah. The neighbor, I had his name written down. It is, I didn't write it down. My God.
Oh, Madeline.
All right. Robert is the name of the
Louis Giambalvo.
Yeah, he's a character actor. You've seen him in other stuff.
He was in Heart to Heart.
Very Italian.
Yeah, he was in Death to Smoochie.
I remember Death to Smoochie. Surprisingly enough, a good show.
Oh, he was in Weekend at Bernie's. He played Vito. Anyway,
He's a character that actor that, you know, I remember him from other things. He's the excited neighbor. I'm looking at the notes. Immediately Tiffany shows up.
He's like excited. He says, like, you know, she's not much to look at, but any woman that can write like that can dangle my participles any day.
Yes. Talking about Tiffany.
Tiffany shows up and she's like, where's Crystal? And then Charlie's response is, she went upstairs to get the ocelot out of the jacuzzi.
Because
Crystal Madeline has run upstairs to, like, get into Crystal drag. And man, it's great.
And this is not the, you know, palatial estate that you'd expect from a glamorous writer. This is suburbia, you know, two adults, no kids.
Yeah.
Single income. But then Tiffany notices, or Tiffany's assistant notices, their wedding photo.
Oh, yeah. And then Charles snatches it from them and then throws it out the window to the sound effect of glass just shattering.
and says Crystal comes back down, Madeline Kahn as Crystal, and she's asked about it. Tiffany says, oh, was that a wedding photo? And she says, no, that was Charles's graduation photo. We went out to dinner.
Yeah, and so didn't she then say, like, would you care to park it somewhere, my dear? Like, when she's trying to, like, get Tiffany to sit down.
Meanwhile, Robert is the neighbor is fawning all over Tiffany. He at one point he says that he wrote The Omen.
Yeah.
Which is a lie. And and then to explain him away, Madeline Kahn says, oh, that was my ex-husband. After we got a divorce, he lost 90% of his brain. It's just an odd line, but I really liked it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's basically the entire show out of that show. And so then, like, her and her henchmen start scheming. And their plan basically is to go over to where the idiot lives and just try to, like, get him to spill the beans on what is going on with Crystal, because Tiffany knows there's something up. And so Robert is next door playing basketball alone.
Without a hoop. He's just throwing a ball at a chair.
Now, for Pride Month, I will point out that he is a stocky, hairy man who is wearing the shortest shorts I've seen, like, a very short. And
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, he can get it. And he's about to get it.
And he has the name Robert written across his chest.
which is not sexy.
Which is the weirdest. And also, did you notice that he doesn't have a coffee table? He just has two cardboard boxes set up together. He has a very large living room.
I can fix him. No.
It looks like the Cosby Show interior. It's set up the same way, with the door and the stairs up and stairs going up, and it's big and it is decorated. He has things on the wall, he has furniture, but for some reason, no coffee table, just two big cardboard boxes next to each other.
You know, you move into a place and it's just hard to unpack those last two boxes. So
they become part of the family.
Tiffany comes over and essentially, like, seduces him into, like, trying getting information. She, like, plucks a chest hair off of him.
He says that, I just love men who sweat, And he goes, oh, you must love Louis Armstrong.
Yeah.
A non-sequitur if I ever heard one, but I loved it.
Now, like, this is, you know, there's a lot of problems here in that, you know, later when Robert finds out that Tiffany's actually a man, he gets like sick to his stomach, which is a transphobic trope that oh my God, it's so gross. The like attorneys tried to say that like the murder of trans women is justified because like the repulsion that the man feels when justified, like, no. So this is part of that culture, so that's not cool. Yes. But like, it is wild knowing, because it's so, Charles Ludlam is obviously a man and Tiffany's obviously a man dressed as a woman. And so it is, you know, you're watching this scene in a 1984 sitcom and it's like, these are two men. These are two humans with penises, like touching each other in very intimate ways.
I was going to say, like, the same thing.
How far is this going to go?
Is that in the show, it's revulsion, but you have an actor, two actors that are very comfortable.
Yeah.
Rubbing interiors of thighs repeatedly, just like it's
and I'm surprised the censors would let them do that, because like the censors would be like, that's a man. Those are two men. They can't do that. I don't care if in the story he thinks it's a woman. Like, it does feel like, oh, Madeline knew no one's watching our show. Also, spoiler alert, this aired opposite the Grammys. So like, no one was watching this one, so they were like, oh yeah, play with his chest here, go for it.
Yeah, like rub him down. Like, this was a very, you could have gone a different direction. You could have been like, oh, hubba hubba, and just kind of like shook your shoulders and kind of like nudged a little bit. No,
yeah,
they went for it.
And Tiffany also could have been bad at flirting.
Yeah,
like it could have been clear, like, this is a man, clumsy man, but it's like, no. Charles Ludlam, great female impersonator, is, aside from just like having a deeper voice, like, is very convincingly, physically has the walk better than I do. Jesus Christ.
I'd also like to point out that if you go to Charles Ludlam's Wikipedia page, which I recommend you do, there's an amazing history of an actor and a writer, that they do say that he is an openly gay actor, and openly gay is a link, and if you click it, it takes you to the page for coming out, which I thought was just like an interesting, like, oh, okay, that's where that link goes.
Like, no, openly gay was a late 70s glam rock band that Charles Ludlam was the lead singer of. No,
pointing out too that Charles Ludlam did pass away in the late 80s of AIDS. His obituary was the first front page New York Times obituary to mention AIDS, and he has his own street in the West Village. So this is not a bit player. Charles Ludlam is part of history, and just being able to watch this performance, I admit I didn't look up some of his other plays on YouTube, but he wrote a lot of them and they were well received. They won awards. For a while, Irma Vep was also the most performed play in Brazil in the early 2000s. Like, plays still being performed.
A very big deal. And it's cool that Madeline Kahn, you know, had this. I wonder if they wrote the script knowing, she's like, oh, my friend is Charles Ludlam. We should do something. It's the next scene is, oh, is she, she's back at home, or she's opening a gift from a fan.
Yeah.
Who has sent her a necklace.
Mail. Yeah. She's getting Crystal's mail.
And so she opens the box and it's a necklace and she's like, oh, this is so sweet. And it's like a very lovely letter. And then it like goes into like, and if you're not wearing it the next time I see you, I will kill you.
It's like, price of stardom, baby.
Yeah, that's a fun line.
It's kind of disturbing because it does happen. But
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It cuts back, and then it cuts back to Robert's place to show. Then Tiffany basically gets him to say, "You know, Crystal Love is a man, right?" Which, haha. Yeah. But he means Crystal Love is literally the man, Charlie.
Yeah.
And Tiffany believes Crystal Love is a man, just like I am, just yes. like I drag queen is would look like me.
But then we go back to the house and we discover that Crystal has been invited to a talk show with Tiffany, and it is a talk show hosted by Eddie Garvin, that does not get an IMDb credit.
He is basically like Andy Rooney kind of is the like, because she's like, I'm going to go there, and he's going to be like, do people read these? I don't. Does that mean I'm out of touch? Like all that. And I love when they get there and he, like, before they start, he's like, okay, Tiffany, Crystal, those are the names we're going with, right? It's like, you sure of that? I love that.
And the camera goes on and immediately those are the words he says.
Yeah, just literally like just dismissive. But then, and so like, then Crystal, I think, is defending romance novels. And she's like, people are just like, they're hungry for, like, your cameraman, he's hungry for romance, for a potato, for something.
And Crystal is wearing the largest mutton chops sleeves.
Yeah, I would love this gown. It is like huge, basically like it's all powder blue and like huge pillows, essentially, for the shoulders and sleeves. And then like a lace brocade kind of like bust area. And it's ridiculous. It's very 80s prom.
Very ridiculous.
And I also wrote that, like, at this point I realized Madeline as Crystal reminds me of Nadja from What We Do in the Shadows.
You're not that far off.
Yeah. It's got that, like, it's got that same kind of, like, you know, tossed off, you know, just like casual mania. Or just like,
yeah, it's she's going along with everything. She's yes anding everything. Tiffany's trying to quote unquote expose her as a man and keeps throwing things as, I know your secret. And then Crystal will say things like, fine, you got me. I'm not really Norwegian. I was just dating a Norwegian man and things got confused.
Well, and then Tiffany starts trying to say things, and then Crystal just does a very good imitation of like a police siren or like a car alarm.
I don't understand why.
Yeah. Well, then the neighbor comes in, warns Charlie, but too late, right?
Too late. Well, the thing that happens is Crystal gets there first. Crystal tears.
Oh, yeah.
There's an unprompted tears off Tiffany's wig.
Well, it seems like it's because she's standing up and like saying something. And then when she walks past Tiffany, her hand like gets the wig. It felt more accidental than intentional to me.
I feel like it was one of those things where the script said that it happens.
Yeah.
And on set, they're like, well, how does it happen?
It's like, staring opposite the Grammys. Don't worry about it. Just take it off. I did love Tiffany's gown. It's like a green with, I think, sequin and like feathers at the bottom. Ethan, my big drag news, I went to the pageant dress store in the mall, the one that I've been afraid to go in because I'm a mustachioed, gray haired, short man going into a store that exclusively sells gaudy as hell prom dresses and like quinceañera dresses, and run by two Eastern European women. I mean, they had a bunch of gowns just like, you know, those with just feathers and sequins and shit. I bought one, so, you know, the start.
We're going to have a talk about your finances, mister, because I'm scared. Well,
no, yeah, that and all the Marvel Legends that I keep buying. Oh, and ooh.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Folks, Brett just got out of his chair and is walking towards the wall, and he's just brought back, oh my God,
a Star-Lord helmet.
Star-Lord helmet.
I went to Target, and it was 50% off, and I don't care. I am trash for Peter Quill. I don't give a fuck what anyone says. Chris Pratt sucks, but Star-Lord is literally the superhero that I imagined myself being when I was a child, and somehow he exists and is in a bunch of Marvel movies, and I love him. So I don't care.
He was the one that made Thanos snap. He was the one that screwed everybody out of living.
No.
5 years.
Wrong. Do you know the only two motherfuckers in all of Infinity War that actually did the right thing were Wanda Maximoff, who destroyed the Mind Stone and killed Vision, and Peter Quill, who, as soon as Thanos grabbed Gamora, he pulled the fucking trigger. He was going to kill her just like she asked, except he already had the Reality Stone and turned it into bubbles. But it's like, why didn't Doctor Strange destroy the Time Stone? Huh?
He doesn't want it to destroy.
Why didn't
the
time he?
Stone.
Because he has to protect it. God, it's like, so what I love about that movie, though, is that every single stone is attached. I've thought about this so fucking much. Every single stone is attached to a many versus the few choice. And every single time, everyone always chooses the few. And it's and the only person that doesn't is our Star-Lord and Scarlet Witch. And because Star-Lord lost his temper when he found out the love of his life was murdered, which 100% would do, I would do the exact same fucking
That's
thing.
That's not what a hero would do. It's not what a hero would do.
Depending on a scoundrel would. depending on how much medicine... Depending on what my doses are. Right now, I don't feel anything, joy or sadness. So probably I'd just let it slide. But if I had skipped a dose, Thanos would get a punch right in the face.
But your superpower is adjusting your meds.
Yeah.
So you have different emotions.
That's what's in my pouches. It's just purple Anolol and Zoloft and Wellbutrin. God.
So we're back at the
the host of the TV show says zoom in on his head because he's bald. Like Charles Ludlam is a bald man.
Yeah.
Or bald person. I have no idea how Charles Ludlam identified on the gender spectrum, because that was just a whole other concept in the 80s. Like that's, you know,
he has like the the bald head, but the wraparound hair and the sideburns.
The atoll. An atoll.
That's what my dad has.
Yeah. Waterworld. So,
but then he's like, oh, but Crystal has a surprise too, and then snatches her wig to see that there's red hair underneath.
Yeah, I have it on authority that Crystal Love is also a redhead. That was good. And he's like, my name is Bert, and then thank God I still got my job as a waitress.
And he struts out, and Eddie Garvin says probably the weirdest line of the whole thing.
Oh, I loved it.
Can a man write as a woman as well as a woman? That's a topic for another show. Who wants to see that? I don't.
He's done. I love that. And then I got more commercials. One was for soft and dry deodorant, which was ice skating themed. And then one of just a kid dressed as a cowboy with his mother asking him questions about his cold and him saying no or yes. And then it's for Cotylenol chewable tablets. I don't know. And then a commercial for Anne Margaret and the late great Treat Williams in Streetcar Named Desire, which aired, at the end of this week. I think like probably the Sunday night after this Tuesday. So, yeah. And then we go back to the show.
And it's really, it just wraps up.
Yeah. He's like, how do you feel about Donahue? Cause like Charlie's like, hey man, we can still milk this. And yeah, she's like, he's like, nice hair, short. No.
And then it's kind of like, that's the end of the deception.
Well, and then Tiffany comes and is like, oh, it turns out they're not airing the segment. And Crystal says, oh, because, yeah, I could see them not wanting to just like really embarrass like one person in particular. And Tiffany says, yeah, because the host's fly was open. Who wants to see that? I don't.
Like the last 10 minutes of the show became very Eddie Garvin focused.
Yeah, fuck Eddie Garvin.
He gets these great lines. He becomes this like center of attention. He's not just like a background character. They're like, oh, we're on this guy's show. It's like, no, he's got good comedy.
I know. It's very purred Happily. Like yeah, it's very like you know, if this show had gone on for multiple seasons, the writers would have just kept figuring out ways to get people back on that show, because that actor and the game that they have established with him is just too funny.
He's just terrible at everything he does. And he's
also is uninterested and hates all of it. Great.
So, that's how the show ended. It was just kind of like his fly was down. Laugh, laugh, laugh. Goodbye.
Yeah, more that's ragtime. How the series ended. Are you ready for some must-have facts?
I'm really interested to see if you were able to dig any up.
Oh, yeah. Well, so on the ratings, 9.1 million people watched this episode of television.
That's not a lot.
So where do you think it ranked for the week? Give me a number.
For the week?
Yeah. In its weekly Nielsen ratings, where do you think it fell?
46th?
61st.
Mm.
The top five shows of the week were number five, Dynasty. Number four, Simon and Simon. Number three was Dallas. Number two was the Grammy Awards. And number one was Lace Part 2. And so Lace was a TV mini, so like two-part, I think, TV event starring Phoebe Cates as a film star who is searching for her birth mother. And this is great. The miniseries includes this iconic line that TV Guide voted the greatest line in all of television in like the 90s is incidentally, which one of you bitches is my mother? Which, I need to find a clip of Phoebe Cates saying that, because incidentally, which one of you bitches is my mother is gay canon.
Lace yeah. 2, the log line on IMDb is, while in the first part Lily searched for her mother, she now questions her mom on the identity of her father.
Oh man,
going back
part
to the well.
Part 3, cousin. Part 4, aunt. Just keep going. Ooh, incidentally, which one of you bitches is my mother?
It's great. I'm looking at the no one else in this I recognize. Literally nobody else in this is a name that I recognize.
Isn't that crazy that, like, for I guess these 2 weeks, America had Lace Mania to be the number one watch, for part two to be the number one most watched show above Dallas and the Grammy Awards?
Yeah.
Like, Lace, just people eating up that Lace.
the world was hungry for more Phoebe Cates content.
Well, and you know, like, a better world.
It looks like Angela Lansbury was in the first one. Honor Blackman was in the first one.
Yeah,
that's about it. That's all you get.
So the Tuesday night lineup that O'Madeline aired as a part of, and this also might explain the ratings. The night kicked off with foul ups, bleeps, and blunders, and then went to Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Oh,
followed by
is that the Ripley's Believe It or Not with Jack Palance?
Oh, Believe maybe
or not.
I always get confused with Beyond Fact or Fiction, Beyond Belief, and then Three's Company, which is somehow still on, is the lead-in to O'Madeline. And then, closing out the night, the greatest show of all time, Heart to Heart.
So this was Three's Company's last season.
Okay, good. And I think this might have been Heart to Heart's last season.
So Susan Sarandon was no longer there.
Susan Summers.
Suzanne Summers, sorry. Not, yes.
Not... not Susan Sarandon. O'Madeline aired this episode, and they air one more episode in 2 weeks, and then it's reported in the papers that O'Madeline is going on hiatus. It's going to be replaced with a Leslie Nielsen comedy called Shaping Up. But don't worry, O'Madeline fans, the show is expected to return in the spring. And it never did.
And it those 18 episodes did not make it to DVD. They are on all of them are on YouTube.
Yeah.
And various qualities.
So Tom Shales, a Pulitzer Prize winning critic, was one of the 11 newspapers to write. And mind you, I think 10 of those entries are just like a blurb, and they actually included Charles's name in it, because most of the blurbs didn't even include the other author who was a man dressed as a woman. Like, they didn't even include that part of it. So Tom Shales wrote, Madeline Kahn shines tonight, and she gets more than ample comedy support from guest star Charles Ludlam. Ludlam, one of the best female impersonators in the business, adds zest as Tiffany. So good job. And at the time, Charles Ludlam was starring off-Broadway in Galas, a modern tragedy written and directed by Ludlam, which was based on the life of Maria Callas. And yeah, so... this is an excerpt from the biography about this. I'm trying to find... here's what the biography says about the O'Madeline episode. But in retrospect, what's most fascinating is that the network hemmed and hawed over the matter of revealing Ludlam's gender up until the last minute. In his column for the Daily News on January 29th, Harry Hahn notified his readers that Galas, which is the Maria Callas play he's working on, would be dark for the week so that Charles Ludlam can drag himself to Hollywood. An old history classmate of his from Hofstra, Madeline Kahn, asked him to guest on her series, Oh Madeline, and he will, without compromising any standards. He'll play a woman novelist of the Barbara Cartland School of Romance. And then Hahn ended his item with this juicy tidbit. To date, the net hasn't decided whether to reveal his true gender. So that's just nuts. Regardless of how Ludlam felt, Ludlam simply had a ball doing Oh Madeline. According to Kahn, perhaps there was some attitude manifested by others involved with the show who failed to understand or appreciate Charlie's particular gifts, but Charles wasn't offended by any of it. He had the most wonderful time, and he was just a joy to work with, a very generous artist. As others recalled, he returned from Hollywood thrilled with the entire experience. He especially enjoyed working with the costumers and teaching them tricks of the trade, such as stuffing his bra with birdseed to better simulate realistic mammillary movement.
He did not do a lot of screen work.
No.
I know, like, big profile stuff. He did an episode of Miami Vice.
Yep.
He was in The Big Easy with Dennis Quaid.
So weird.
Ellen Barkin, but like not was more or less stage.
And I guess like that can make sense because, as Madeline Kahn said in that, quote, that people on the set were kind of, maybe didn't appreciate his talents. Who knows how they treated him? And then also the network itself being like, well, we don't actually know if we want people to know about this.
Well, it's interesting too that watching this entire thing, it felt more like a stage play.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
The performances, you can tell that they were very over the top. It was staged in a way where all the characters just kind of like exit left, right, center. It was set up like a stage play.
Yeah. So what are you watching tonight?
Uh-oh.
So on ABC is Oh Madeline. Madeline disguises herself as a flamboyant authoress so she can appear in a television talk show with the leading romance novelist who is a man posing as a woman. That's a brave entry that mentioned that part. On CBS, we have the Grammy Awards. John Denver hosts the 26th annual Grammy Awards presentation live from the Shrine Auditorium in Los Angeles with scheduled appearances from Chuck Berry, Janie Frick, Melissa Manchester, Linda Ronstadt, Bob Seger, and Sheena Easton. And on NBC, you can watch the last half hour of Riptide. Cody, Nick, and Boz help a woman accused of killing her lover, but the lady is kidnapped during the course of their investigation. What are you watching?
I mean, if you put a gun to my head, I'm probably watching Riptide.
Oh, man. Because you'd love Cody, Nick, and Boz.
Cody, Nick, and Boz. I don't know. The guests for the Grammy Awards, I'm like...
Now, see, that is wild because this is the Thriller Grammys. So Thriller wins Album of the Year. So I know, and Culture Club is Best New Artist, and I'm like, there are definitely better celebrities there. Who is performing? 26th annual Grammys. Who is performing it?
26th. God, it was
it's so young. Performers tonight. We got Donna Summer. We got Big Country. Bonnie Tyler. Chuck Berry, the Eurythmics are performing. Herbie Hancock is performing. Oh my God. John Denver and a Muppet. Don't want to. And Wynton Marsalis and Irene Cara. Yeah. Record of the year was Beat It. Album of the year was Thriller. Song of the year was Every Breath You Take. And Best New Artist was Culture Club. I mean, like, this is, if you, this is the most 80s you can get.
The winners. Yes, sure. Like, the winners are fantastic, but I'm
watching.
I don't know. What's Bob Seger doing there? What does he not performing? He's just there.
Bob Seger. Probably. He's probably presenting. Why don't you list the presenters? List the performers, especially the performers are like the fucking Eurythmics.
And I'm not here to watch Bob Seger trip over
Donna Summer. Donna Summer doing She Works Hard for the Money. Yes. Yes. Bonnie Tyler doing Total Eclipse of the Heart,
which is probably great. The long version, probably.
Yeah. The Eurythmics doing Sweet Dreams. I mean, like, this is an amazing Grammys. Yeah, I'm watching the Grammys.
Yeah, I'm probably watching the Grammys too. If I'm not, I don't know. The threshold is, do I want to watch this or do I want to read a book? And the older I get, the more books I want to read. So I don't know. Yeah. This is a tough one.
I feel like I'm a 39-year-old gay man in 1984. I am watching Culture Club win a Grammy and the Eurythmics perform and Bonnie Tyler and Donna Summer. And hopefully I'm at a party with other gays. We're having a good time.
Laughing at Bob Seger.
And crushing on him. On IMDb, this episode has no rating. Which makes sense.
So there are no Madeline heads in this world.
I mean, I would give this like a 7.6.
I might give this a 6.7. I might flip those numbers. And then, because I think there's a lot of good to it. Granted, you know, watching it with bad video and audio does detract quite a bit.
Believe me, I did for a second think about ripping the audio from one and the video from another and putting them together. But
Brett.
That's overkill.
I would give it more than, it wasn't bad. I think Charles Ludden did a great job. He, of all the characters that had the must-see performance, you don't even have to ask me. I'm gonna say it's Charles Ludlam.
Yeah. Well, and you say him. No, I'll say Charles Ludlam as well. I mean, Madeline Kahn is also great. Because the bar is really high when you tell me that Madeline Kahn had a sitcom at like height of her powers, and it lived up to that. So, good performance, but Charles Ludlam was great.
Charles Ludlam did phenomenal drag in every scene that he was in.
Yeah.
Every single one of those outfits was spot on.
Oh yeah, the gold lame, like the track gold pants, lame pants that she was wearing to seduce the neighbor. I was like, work. Yes,
it was like that. I'm like, pants, okay, so you're doing the acting and you are very well made up.
And I'm assuming that was probably all of her wardrobe, if that excerpt is, you know, correct, of like probably showed up and was like, this is what I wear. This is what we're doing.
So I would say that Charles has the must-see performance, but Madeline Kahn, I don't know what the rest of the series is like. In the opening credits, she's in a whole bunch of different costumes. There's a whole montage of her just screaming. So I don't know what
that sounds amazing.
Try to watch the first 30 seconds of the other version so you can get the ragtime banjo trombone intro of the very surreal, just clips from the show where she's screaming, where she's dressed like a leopard, where she's falling off a couch. It's, I don't know. I don't know what killed this show first.
I mean, I think that it was too good. I mean, I think that the jokes were too weird and too smart.
Was it that time slot? Was it up against the Grammy?
I mean, that time slot is horrible.
You're I mean, the rest of the
after evening, bloopers and Three's Company, and now, like, you know, Heart to Heart, you're Three's Company.
Look, I love Don Knotts. Knotts is an American treasure. The last season of Three's Company, I'm going to say that probably the steam's run out of the boiler.
Yeah. For a long time. And must other people see this episode? I mean, I think that this is a fascinating, fun again, another look at another classic drag performer. I mean, like, if you are asked, name me drag queens before 1990, and you say RuPaul and Divine, we have introduced you to others, yes. Including T.C. Jones. That's his name, right?
T.C. Jones.
Okay. Yeah. T.C. Jones and now Charles Ludlam.
The class is Drag 101. The instructor's T.C. Jones. Thank you to everyone who has watched our episode on YouTube for the Alfred Hitchcock Hour. It now has more views than our Doris Day Show episode, which blows my mind.
Very odd.
I didn't think we'd get more than 200, but we have. So thank you, everyone.
Yeah. And, you know, we'll be back with the 90s. We'll think of something notable and known. Probably that you can stream somewhere. And then, you know, got a whole summer, baby of life to live. Ethan, where can they find you on the internet?
Check me out on Instagram at EthanK55 and don't check me out on Threads. Because I posted one thing and I'm just like, I'm already sick of this. And I got them.
I'm tired. I can't. I am on Instagram at Brett White. I'm also on Twitter still at Brett White. And I got a Blue Sky. I got a Threads. I'm not using either. Waiting to see what happens with the dust settles. And you can also follow my drag account at Barb Hardly, although I have not done drag in a lot in much over the past 6 weeks because I'm depressed and it's a lot of work and et cetera. So if you want to make me happy, leave comments on YouTube.
Leave comments, reach out to us. Friend us on Instagram, friend on Twitter.
Email at musthaveseentv@gmail.com. And, you know, rate and review in iTunes. I think we got two more star ratings because I think the number went from 66 to 68, but no written reviews. And also, I don't even know what those star ratings were. They could have been more one stars. I have no idea. That's why you got to write something. So you
don't understand
know.
Stars. How do things get rated these days? I don't know. I'm new to technology. I'm just a baby.
That's me. You're Jonathan Winters from Mork and Mindy. And yeah, so please have fun this summer and
we'll be back soon.
Yeah. Tip your local drag queens in honor of Charles Ludlam.
And respect the strikes and don't cross the picket lines.
Don't cross the picket lines. You'll get your Marvel movies eventually. Just chill. They deserve to be paid fairly.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.